Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back. Major Ed Dames with us. Dr. Doom. They still call you Dr. Doom, don't they?
Occasionally. Yeah.
I know you don't like that, but it is what it is. With these Project Starman, what are you trying to prove, Ed, or see with the Sasquatch program?
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to put everything, lay it out as simply as I can. Before I go on, I'd like to mention a book that I like very much. I'm a minimalist. I only keep like 20 books at any given time. If I buy another one, one has to go off the shelf. That's what minimalism is all about. The book is written by E. Andrew Boyd, a PhD in applied mathematics. It's called Beyond Comprehension, a scientific look at the challenge of knowing everything. And in the first part of the book, a very, very interesting chapter, he describes how dogs do not comprehend the concept of the number 10. And he extends the idea analogously to humans. If humans are also mammals, perhaps the things that the human things that are beyond our comprehension as well. And I'm going to have to agree with that after all the years of research on the ET phenomenon, so-called. Now, that first observation with those green fireballs, and that project was called Project Twinkle. Your listeners can look it up.
Twinkle.
It was very, very extensively studied prior to Blue Book. And it petered out. Those things stopped happening, and we have a good idea why that is, but I don't want to go into that at the moment. So anyway, and I've taken Jacques Vallée out to the site, that site as well, too, circa 1991-92. But when I came back, I had already hired, I was setting up a civilian company, I recently retired, and I hired all of the remote viewers, even though I had gone on to a very, very dark unit before I retired. I had already hired all of the remote viewers, almost all, in the unit to work for me, to moonlight on my projects. And predominantly all of those, were, except for corporate clients, those were UFO ET types of stuff. But I want to read, if I may, a summary that Paul Smith wrote when I came back, because he did not go out in the field with us, and I paid Paul to remote view exactly what happened out there, because we're constrained, our eyeballs are constrained, we're bandwidth limited in terms of
sure. The
light spectra and temporal limited in terms of things that we can process, how fast, that kind of stuff. I all my students know this well. May I read the summary about that?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, here it goes. Paul wrote this on the 4th of June, 1990. And this is vis-a-vis that fireball and one other thing. After the fireball, I shined the laser pointer at the mesa into which the fireball disappeared, and a light shined back that was the same color, green in this case, and then it went out. Here's Paul's summary. He wasn't there. Sight involves a semi-tangible, energetically resilient, radiating globe of energy located in a rocky, austere region with major topological changes in elevation, sheer cliffs, large outcroppings of igneous, metamorphic, and sedimentary rock. Water is not present in significant quantities. This energy phenomenon fluoresces an intense yellow-green light, and though generally spheroid in shape, fluctuates much in the way a soap bubble responds to air pressure, currents, and other forces impinging on its structure. There is a humming one senses, not hears. This globe seems to be both within the rock cavity where it is manifest, yet without it as well. It is partially surrounded by the earth, yet also partially free of the ground. It is there despite the rocks intrude yet don't. There are other people or beings associated with this globe. There is a sense that the people present are aware of, but rather indifferent to observers, that means us. They're slightly amused, like one might be amused by apes watching people at the zoo or babies thinking they understand the unspoken agendas and motivations of the adult world. The purpose here is adjusting, calibrating, sending, arranging in a physio-energetic sense. There is an impression of great but subtle power, only a portion of which is there, the rest of which is elsewhere, the tip of the iceberg analogy. Radiant, flexible, substantial are other words that describe this energy form. The beings here are, in a sense, professional, like they are completely going about their business and are disciplined or single-minded enough not to be distracted by outside irritants like us, like the cop who maintains decorum despite name-calling from bystanders. 30 more seconds. The event occurred primarily as an adjustment or maintenance mission, but had a slight element of showing off or revealing themselves, teasing with a purpose. Otherwise, it was a very minor routine sort of technical exercise, revealing a small fraction of capability. Full capability would never be revealed except in the event of extreme circumstances. Stasis, manipulation, transmutation, transportation, physical rearrangement, total reconfiguration are all capabilities. The agenda here is to manipulate the environment only enough to create the appropriate situation to satisfy the agenda, like an oil company changing the landscape, only enough to facilitate its objective, leaving the rest the same. They are not indifferent to the needs of the natives, but the needs of the natives are subordinate to the objective of these others. That is a very good professional summary from a professional remote viewer.
And what was he saying in terms of what this might have been?
All those things, all we saw was his green fireball and the glow on the, and what he's saying is there's an agency behind it, an intelligent agency behind it that's doing something there, knows that we're there, and gives us a little, you know, throws us a bone, and that's it. Well, after that, after several years of that site and the event started to wane.
And that was 1990?
That was 1990 when he wrote the report. We had already been there earlier in the year. And then I began to take scientists to the site, where, and I have the full reports there too. But I want to jump ahead to 1994, that Ariel School event outside of Harare, Zimbabwe, where all these middle school kids were out there playing baseball, went into the savannas, and came back with this story that I've talked about on Coast to Coast before. And your listeners can look at all that. John Mack, the late John Mack, happened to be in South Africa at the time and flew up to Harare to interview these kids. And I got to see some of the original 35mm. And the kids heard in their minds, 60 of them, or 40 or 60, heard in their minds, looking at this big bug-eyed guy and standing in front of a saucer, they think they did, that you got to take better care of your planet, your planet's dying.
Wow.
And I said,
that's
okay,
dramatic.
I'm going to do a full court press using my all my resources on this, on the agency that orchestrated this event. Okay? And I did. And the meeting that what I want to meet with is this agency, and they are not ETs. They are what Jacques Vallée and I have both called, and John Keel, the late John Keel, ultra terrestrials. They live on Earth.
Always did.
Excuse me. Yes, always did. If you look at the Travis Walton case, which is a real case, no BS. When we remote view that particular event. He is inside an object, and we don't use the term vehicle or craft in our work. He's inside an object, but the three or four entities that are there are wraith-like, and they're wafting through this particular object. They're almost, they're not physical. They're semi-physical. In fact, I briefed at the highest levels of the Pentagon. I said, we are dealing here, in many cases, with what I term transcendental technologies. And many of these things emanate from a seamount, inside a seamount, to the west of Fiji. They're very deep, and I've talked about this on your show before. So we're not dealing with ETs here. Yes, extraterrestrials are involved with planet Earth. All the crop circles, the real ones that aren't fabricated by humans, are directed from an underground location on Mars. I've talked about this before. So that's ET. And, you know, we've got other things that are ET. A lot of the mining, the ancient, God knows how ancient they are, mining activities on the moon, that's where structures are still are present there, were done by robots that were left there to mine by an intelligent race.
Many, many years ago.
Oh, yeah. Millions, we think. Yeah. But they're gone now, and the mining stopped. There's still activity on both the moon and Mars. In fact, Paul Smith and I, for a contract, a German contract, remote viewed what shut down the Phoebus 2 spacecraft. The Russians came to me through late General Stubblebine, and said, look, what happened to Phoebus 2 on this
orbit? That was the object that the Russians had sent up, the Soviets at the time, that
Roger.
They saw something coming at it, and then it was like gobbled up or something.
Yeah, it was a big flash, and then it was gone. So Paul Smith and I particularly remote viewed the demise of that, and both our descriptions were very, very interesting. We worked independent of each other, but we both used the analogy of a guard dog that's waiting for its owners to come back, and it sees something, perceives something up there, and goes up to guide it down to the surface of Mars or under Mars, but it says, it spit it out because it's not its owners, and it went back down to rest in the sands of Mars.
Now, tell me about the Sasquatch connection, though.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So at the Imago part, that part of the project, I took two photos of Sasquatch. The Patterson-Gimlin film, that's a real thing. It's not a fake. And then the one that I posted on your website, last time it was on, of a one walking over a snow ridge in either Vancouver or near Washington State. That's real, too. So I looked at the location. I was interested in using Geofix to look at the location, the present location of each of those, the Patterson-Gimlin object and the one in Washington. They both led to the identical site of the orchestrators of the Ariel School event. Both those Sasquatches, in terms of their location, ended up on that same mountain near Mount Lassen, where I had already established was a contact zone for these orchestrators of the Ariel School event. So I'm quite excited. I'm anticipative, and I'm not afraid because I have no idea what's going to happen. But I feel a little bit spooked, which is funny because I think that was a Shredder or Splinter and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But I am looking forward to that trip.
Well, who knows what you'll uncover.
Yeah, I don't know. Everything is almost a total unknown here, except what we put together, where, like Chaco Canyon, this agency, which is not ET and not human, and I don't know about the Sasquatches. I think they're, I'm not sure what they are. I really have to find that out. But it's a meeting place just like Chaco Canyon was, and remote viewing had to be used to find it. Consciousness tools, not just problem-solving tools, but higher-level refined consciousness tools had to be able to go not after the fact, hey, what happened over here in terms of ET or whatever you want to call it. No, proactive. Okay, what are your protocols, if any, for a meeting? Now, I may not understand what happens there. But I certainly want to bring back something over the next few months that substantiates the things that I'll say if I'm still around to say them.
Ed, the New Madrid Fault, which some say is bigger than the San Andreas Fault, you're seeing some kind of activity there.
About a year and a half ago, perhaps longer, I began to look at the next catastrophic North American, both Canada and the U.S., North American events. And the key event that popped up time and again was an earthquake, and the whole Midwest being affected by this particular earthquake and the New Madrid Fault. But what particularly concerned me was the number of nuclear react power plants that are also affected and needed to be shut down. So despite the structural damages and perhaps human lives lost, and the Mississippi River perhaps shifting, you know, you've got that more serious long-term problem, the gift that keeps on giving, like Fukushima Daiichi.
Well, you know, New Madrid is St. Louis goes through there, everything goes through there, and years ago the Mississippi went the other way when that earthquake hit. Remember that one?
Yeah.
In the 1800s?
It changed its flow. But this time I'm thinking that it might not just change its flow, it may actually shift.
Jeez.
Because there's a lot of places where the, you know, the levees and the built up the Army Corps of Engineers has really constrained the river. But if those go down, the Mississippi changes its course.
Major Ed Dames with us. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He also has a DVD series out called Learn Remote Viewing, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the work that he does. People are a little concerned about an economic collapse, Ed. What does remote viewing say about that?
I had a bunch of economists in the professional, in the professional development course way back in 95. And they were curious as to whether there would ever be an economic collapse. So we put together a series, an ensemble of different technical remote viewing search terms and all that. And lo and behold, yes, there would be a global economic collapse. And I talked about that with Art Bell way back in 96, as well as drastic climate change, things that would force us to would not disallow us growing crops the way we have traditionally grown them. But the economic collapse, just like the kill shot sequences, when people said, oh, that can't happen, it's bunk. And then these massive solar flares that, thank goodness, were not Earth-directed happened. So people began to think, what I said, the unthinkable would happen. The U.S. would default on its T-bill, its bond payments.
That's all we need, geez.
Yeah, and then newspapers, you know, came out, it's been about 7 years now, with the same thing. The unthinkable. They actually said that, the unthinkable, neologism kill shot, they adopted that idea, the unthinkable, perhaps not listening to me. But the parallel news line said it is possible that we may default. I mean, come on. Look at the global economic condition right now. Most of your listeners know how fragile we are economically in terms of the amount of debt the world has.
Ed, does remote viewing get involved in, political outcomes and things like that?
No, we experimented early with the elections. That's all. I have no interest. Maybe other people do, but it's very, very difficult to do things like that because you have so many people involved making decisions in those cases. But in something like a presidential election, the winner of the next presidential election, there's a number of ways to handle that. Because it's in the future, it already exists, right? Time as we know
exactly.
It, this idea of linear time. Yeah, it's linear, but you and I are both dead in another time, and we're both not alive in another time, too. But those events still exist, the big events. There's a little bit of there's a lot of wiggle room and some fuzzy sets that happen around smaller events like football games and things like that that I don't want to go into. But when we're looking at, for instance, the next election, if there's a female running at the end of the election, then opposed to a male, then it's very, very easy for us to determine using indirect methods the winner of the election.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.